Rational discussion, common sense, open debate. RCR, Reality Check Radio with Paul Brennan.
All right, it's time for our regular chat about the airlines and aviation in general with my good friend and former co-host of the New Zealand Aviation Podcast that we did years ago, but it was good practice for this, Martin Noakes in Brisbane. Hello again, Martin.
G'day, Paul. G'day, g'day.
G'day, mate. Okay, so yeah. I'm just trying to be, you know, as Aussie as I can be. Yeah, I hope enough. I sounded like the real deal. Okay, Martin, some big news out of Qantas. What is it?
Yes, indeed. Big news. Alan Joyce is leaving later in the year, I think around early November, 1st of November, and he is being replaced as CEO of the Qantas Group by Vanessa Hudson, a 28-year veteran of the business. She's the ex-chief financial officer, and so she's moving up into the main office.
So that's interesting, because we thought Cam Wallace of MediaWorks fame, Air New Zealand fame, was a sitter for that.
Yes. Turns out he's not. I think it's a pretty conservative choice. I think it's probably a very good choice. She knows the business. She's certainly going to be less flamboyant than Mr. Joyce. They probably want a steady pair of hands running the business for the next foreseeable while. And so they've chosen her. I mean, she has been with them a long time, 28 years.
Okay, so she knows, like you say, she knows the business. What's the reaction been? Because, you know, Qantas, big deal in Australia. It's, you know, it's the flying kangaroo, mate. It's the expression of Aussie abroad and the image of Australia and all those things.
Pretty muted. I see the stock price fell in a falling market. So Qantas fell a bit more than the stock market, but news like this generally does something like that. I expect that will pick up. I think it's a safe choice. You know, she obviously loves working there, being there long enough, and see what she does. She'll probably be seen as perhaps less, how would you say, pugnacious perhaps than Alan Joyce. He was quick to anger and quick to upset people. He's done a good job, yeah, people would say. But time for him to move on before he upsets anybody too much. Yeah, they've gone with Vanessa, who will probably do just fine, certainly from a financial standpoint, and that's probably what it's all about at the moment.
Yeah. I wonder what Alan Joyce goes on and does after this. I wonder if he'll stay in the airline business, because he was a controversial CEO, wasn't he? Especially he got offside with a lot of the employees in the more recent.
He made some pretty hard calls, like when he shut them down completely. Yeah, that no one was expecting that when he pulled the pin on them. And he had to have security protection after that because there were a lot of threats made against him. Yes, controversial is a good word, and I expect they've gone with Vanessa Hudson because she is highly likely to be significantly less controversial and concentrate on running the business in a stable and possibly conservative fashion.
I remember seeing a documentary on the A380, you know, engine explosion out of Singapore, and reminiscing on how he found out about it. Is he was driving in the car in Sydney, being driven in the car in Sydney, and that someone phoned him and drew his attention to the fact that the Qantas stock price was dropping. And that was how he found out about it. So,
well, that'll do it, right? Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I guess. But, you know, you'd think he might have got a call from the pilot or something, a direct thing. But no, it was, you know, the market's reacting is what flagged it to him.
Yeah, well, that's the news he'd get instantly on his Twitter feed, probably.
Yeah. The much anticipated change of at the top of leadership of Qantas has been announced, and she takes up the position once it's November. So Alan Joyce has still got a bit of time to run.
Yes, and I expect he'll get to make a few tough decisions to tidy things up before she moves into his office.
And she'd know the whole state of the, being the chief financial officer, she'll know the entire financial state of the airline before she even opens or pulls up in a chair behind the desk.
Yeah, absolutely. And she will no doubt run the business from that perspective, right? CEO with a financial focus, probably more so than Alan Joyce. You know, once they get Project Sunrise underway and everything, she'll probably concentrate on just running a steady ship and keeping the punters happy.
With kindness and empathy, Martin.
She'll be very different from Alan Joyce, right? So she's a mother. She has two kids.
All right. So that's big news in our neck of the woods.
So that was big news for Qantas. It's their 13th CEO in the company's 103-year history. And there's also big news for another airline, Finnair, top of the world, opposite to New Zealand, I guess. Finnair have just celebrated 40 years of flying nonstop Europe to Japan. They were the first Western airline to do so, given their ideal placement right at the top of Europe. They started popping over the top to Japan back in 1983, flying a modified DC-1030 with an extra 12,000-liter fuel tank mounted in the hold. And they've kept that up ever since. Now they fly to six Japanese cities, the only Western airline to fly to so many cities. And now they're servicing it with their A350s. And I have to say, from reports I've had from a couple of friends of mine who have flown it, they do say it's a great service if you want to fly from Europe to Japan.
Finnair, are they taking people out of other European cities and hubbing them through?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, because you get into Helsinki quite early in the morning. And it's a shorter flight. Yeah, it's a couple of hours shorter to Helsinki, simply due to where Helsinki's placed. And then you get on they've timed their connections really, really well. So you're generally never in Helsinki for longer than an hour. And then you're anywhere in Europe within two hours after that.
They weren't Boeing customers back in the day. You mentioned that with McDonnell Douglas DC-10s. And then they went on to MD-11s, didn't they, after that?
I think they briefly had MD-11s, yeah. And I don't know what they did in the meantime. I don't know whether they were ever an A340 operator. I'll have to check, actually.
They may have been, but they did go Airbus big time. And as you say, ended up with the A350, which seems to be, I guess, winning the popularity of passengers. I hear more good reports about the A350 than any other airliner, actually, now. Maybe the A380, but that's more limited.
Yeah, you certainly don't hear of frightened passengers talking about the technician wandering along the wing putting tape all over it. That's just recently happened on a Qantas flight, 787 flight. I think that was QF9 to London from Perth, a direct flight they do from Perth to London. They were putting speed tape all over the wings to cover up, or not to cover up, but to stop the coating. I don't know if it's paint, but the coating from flaking off. And there's been a couple of photographs of Chinese 787s just like covered in tape. And apparently it's due to the wing flex makes it hard to keep whatever coatings on the wings. It's hard to keep it on the wings.
Yeah, it's legal and it's technically okay, but it's not a good look ever, is it?
Not a great look.
Gaffer tape. No, it's not gaffer tape.
Yeah, and I mean, it is amazing how it stays on. And on the one Chinese airline picture I saw, I was actually surprised. There were like, you know, square meters of this stuff on the wing. It was quite incredible. Lines of it.
It's been around for a long time. I remember I did some filming for New Zealand Engineering, 25, 30 years ago now, and they call it 500-mile-an-hour tape, and it's probably evolved a bit since then. I think it was back then about $400 a roll, so it was really expensive, but it was incredibly sticky. Oh, my golly. It was so sticky. You get it on your hand, you know, it could lift the skin if you're not careful. So it really does. It really does stick, folks. Yeah, but it was expensive. So probably putting the tape on those wings is $400 or $500 minimum.
Yeah, and like I said, on the Chinese photograph I saw, there was a lot of it. The wing looked like crazy paving, you know?
Yeah. I'm not flying on that. What's Chinese for not? I'm not flying on that. All right. It seems to be some engine issues around. I can speak for New Zealand. I think you're going to speak for Hawaii, but Air New Zealand grounds two aircraft, almost 150,000 passengers impact. And this is what they're saying. The flights have been impacted after Air New Zealand was forced to ground two planes amid global engine shortage. And they're talking about A321 or A320 and A321neos. That's new engine option. It's the acronym for that. Now, we've talked about these engines before, Martin. These are the geared turbofans by Pratt & Whitney, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's two engines available on that class of aircraft. There's the geared turbofans from Pratt & Whitney, and there's the LEAP engine from GE/Snecma, the French company. They're both having issues. The geared turbofan more than the LEAP, fair to say. The geared turbofan is slightly more ambitious than the LEAP, given that it's got this gearbox on it, which other engines tend not to have, or most of them don't have. Although it's not the gearbox causing the trouble, it seems to be the combustors are the issue. It's a problem for Air New Zealand, and Hawaiian Airlines has had to ground four aircraft just due to a shortage of parts. Now, Pratt & Whitney is working on an in-service update It's just going to take a while to roll out. That in-service update will also reduce the fuel burn by another percentage point, they say. So,
okay. Because these are brand new aircraft for both Air New Zealand and for Hawaiian. These are only recently delivered aircraft. You'd be a bit grumpy, or you maybe took delivery of them knowing this could be an issue.
Yeah, I think people are aware of the issues with the engine, and obviously Pratt & Whitney is going to be looking after them. I'm sure the inconvenience is being compensated for in some way. So, yeah, I don't know how unhappy they are.
Air New Zealand say they have 32 engines of that type on their planes, 4 spares, 3 lease options. The airline is still facing a choke point with that. It must be more than just Air New Zealand and Hawaiian. Those are the stories out there. But there are plenty of other like aircraft with other airlines operating the same engine. So I presume it's sort of like a global problem, right?
Yes, and it's also been affecting the A220 up in, I think it's Estonia or one of those Baltic states, Air Baltic or whatever. Their fleet is solely A220s, and they've had the same issue. They've had problems with longevity, not reliability. You know, everyone's at great pains to point out that the engines are perfectly reliable. They're not staying within spec for as long as expected. And Pratt & Whitney's admitted that, and that's why they're rolling out this midlife service upgrade. And that's also why GE and Snecma are working on upgrades for their engine, and it's also having issues in, it's the hot section of the engines on both types, even though the engines are very different. It's the hot section which seems to be causing the problems.
Hot section is where all the combustion is done, and this engine turns the gearbox, which turns the fan, right? That's how it works.
Yes, in the GTF, there's a gearbox between the main shaft and the fan. Yes, the shaft's turning at a higher speed than the fan.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess Pratt & Whitney's got a bit of work to do there. I wonder how much that costs them in compensation.
Well, this will be the thing. It'll be upsetting their, their revenue curve, won't it? Because they will be shelling out to fix this, and they won't be making as much money. And I expect if the engines are being rented out to operators under that power by the hour scheme, yeah, they just won't be getting the money back in. But end of the day, they're going to sell thousands of these engines. They're going to be around for years, so they'll just have to suck it up.
It's really reinvigorated their business, isn't it?
It's done them well, yes. And particularly to the gearbox. The gearbox, if they can use this as a development platform for the gearbox technology, and it seems to be working really well. I mean, Rolls-Royce is now using the gearbox technology on their UltraFan, which is an engine, a gear turbofan for wide bodies. That'll be the biggest fan ever done. And there's also talk that rotor engines are going to start making a comeback because they are the most efficient way of moving a large aircraft. Again, Pratt & Whitney's gearbox will be used on open rotor engines as well.
All right. So where are we going now? Your turn.
Well, Air New Zealand seems to be doing well, both innovatively and in terms of money. I see they're announcing initially for, I think it's going to be on their New Zealand to New York and the eventual New Zealand to Chicago flights. They're looking at selling bunk bed berths for 4-hour stints to economy class passengers. That looks pretty cool. You'll be able to, I presume, go downstairs for a sleep. I don't know where these bunk beds will be. But I would assume they're going to be downstairs, but I could be wrong. I've only seen pictures of the actual beds themselves, but they're going to be on the Dreamliners. And yeah, you can rent the bed for 4 hours and go and have a lie down.
Have they given a price?
I've seen a pricing indication. It didn't actually seem that expensive. It sounded like a couple of $100.
And if you're going downstairs, that's quite a bit of work. That's the cargo hold, isn't it?
I'm just assuming that they'll be downstairs. I would assume that they'd do something like an Lufthansa A340 where the toilets were downstairs, which I thought was a brilliant idea. They might not be downstairs. They might just fence off a section of the plane and put, you know, 8 bunk beds in there because they're only letting you have them for 4-hour stints. So maybe they'll just put them somewhere and see how popular they are.
Oh, okay. I see how it works because on those sectors, they've got limited loading, right? So
yeah, they've got a lot of space. Yeah.
Yeah, they've got the space. So to carry the infrastructure for bunk beds is probably negligible, but you can upsell the people who are already on.
Yeah. Downstairs would be awesome, but I suspect they won't be downstairs.
No, that sounds like too much work. If they've got space in the cabin, they'll use the space in the cabin. That's not a bad idea. That's quite innovative, I have to say.
Not a bad idea, and I wouldn't be surprised if Qantas copy them on their those Sunrise flights when they start doing Australia-Europe direct, because a hell of a long way.
And they've got the same issue, probably a limited load compared to, you know, normal length, long range sectors. So again, you can make something of the space without having to have extra people on and upsell them. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, so not a bad idea.
All right. So I'm reading this from The Guardian. Concerns Australia larger. We've touched on this before. Larger bodied airline passengers forced to pay for two seats prompts call for clearer anti-discrimination laws. The Guardian are reporting this, by the way. And advocates, just reading the story here, advocates say rules for guests of size, that's how they're described. Guests of size are inconsistent across Australian aviation, generating anxiety and unfair costs for those affected. But I wonder if it is unfair. I mean, it's not nice, I suppose, but, you know, if you're taking up the room and you're putting a larger load in the plane, that's costing fuel burn.
Yes, and also if you're crammed into a single seat but essentially taking two seats, the person sitting next to you won't be too happy. Are they at that point being discriminated due to the fact that you can't control your eating habits?
Oh, that's brutal. Here's an example. Budget international carrier Scoot. They're Singapore-based, aren't they?
Yeah.
They've added a note about its policy to its website booking page, warning that if you are a guest of size who requires two seats, fares and fees for two guests apply. And the note says, failure to do so may result in you being denied transportation. But the airline, they say here in the report, does not state who would be considered a guest of size. So no one's quite willing to define it, but using the description. So it's a bit up in the air, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if they'll have to do a thing like a fairground ride where they'll have this like frame you have to be able to walk through.
Oh, right. Well, like the thing you put your bag in to see if it's got the right measurements.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a person-shaped hole you've got to be able to fit through.
Well, as long as it's sort of discreet, right? You don't want to be subjecting that on people in front of everyone.
Well, they're just about to do it in front of 300 people on a plane, so I don't see what difference it makes, but anyway.
Well, Emirates, United Airlines and Jetstar are among those requiring some passengers to pay for two seats as well. So it's not just limited to Scoot. Yeah, what can you do? They cost you extra money.
Yeah, charge them for two seats.
Yeah. This is interesting. In Canada, people with obesity have the right to two seats for the price of one for flights within the country after its Supreme Court made a ruling against airlines, including Air Canada, all the way back in 2008.
Of course they did. Canada.
Good old Canada, eh? Wow. And just to finish this off, in Australia, advocacy group, the Obesity Collective, don't get on the wrong side of them, argues rules for passengers of size are vague and inconsistent across the industry, which in turn generates anxiety, embarrassment, and unfair costs.
I would agree with that. They are vague and inconsistent. So if you're going to have a rule, have a proper rule. If you can't formulate your rule, suck it up.
Well, you know, it's vague because no one wants to say the brutal stuff like you just said, really.
But it's only because I care.
I would say. Yeah. As what Les Patterson used to say, I say, or Dame Ed, I say it out of love. Yeah, right.
Yeah. You know, I'm not the smallest person in the world, but I've sat next to some people who, in fact, the cabin crew moved me. I was in a middle seat and I wasn't going to fit in it. I was like two people either side of me. I was going to be crushed.
Yeah, well, fair enough. It's not a great travel experience that, is it?
No. So good news for New Zealand. They're upping their earnings guidance for 2023. They've upped it from a range of $450 to $530 million, and they've upped it to between $510 and $560 million. So that's pretty good. Part of this is due to the fact that jet fuel hasn't gone up as much as anticipated, or went up and then came down. The network's pumping up again. People are beginning to fly more. So Air New Zealand's going to make quite a lot more money. And obviously that'll be passed on immediately in terms of better value and cheaper fares for customers. I expect that's actually happening as we speak. So
of course it will. Around. Yeah. That's nice to hear for them. And hopefully they feel grateful to New Zealanders and others who have chosen to purchase their services. And yes, like you say, we want to see better deals. Okay. Ever been in an aircraft when it's been hit by a bird strike. Ever had that?
No, I don't think so. Not that I was told, no.
Well, it's pretty obvious when something happens, especially on the ground. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. But and of course, we all know about, you know, Miracle on the Hudson. That was a bird strike, wasn't it? Out of LaGuardia,
landed
in the Hudson. Well, staff are reporting a few deep breaths. Bird strike halts Air New Zealand flight from Auckland to Sydney. Now, it didn't sound too serious. They weren't ingested into the engines. But the way the story is written is interesting. A passenger on the flight said the pilot slammed on the brakes and the whole plane came to a halt. Not just some of it, Martin, the whole plane.
It's better when that happens. You want the whole thing to stop, not just bits of it.
You don't want all the rest of it carrying on, right?
Nah, that's rubbish when that happens.
So the passenger is quoted here as saying, "We didn't really know what happened. People thought there might have been another plane on the runway in front of us. Fortunately, that wasn't the case." Well, you know, birds aren't too good either. There are a few deep breaths. It was interesting, to say the least. And they report here that, let me find the bit here. Okay. The pilot told passengers a couple of birds had hit the front nose of the plane. So there must be other noses on the plane.
I assume there must be. There's probably noses all over the place.
So the front...
Why wouldn't there be?
The front nose is probably the most prominent nose on the plane, but yeah, there must be other
nose. The main nose. Maybe you just call it the main nose.
We took another one in the main nose.
That's good.
It's an odd way of writing it. Sometimes I wonder if journalists know anything about aeroplanes.
Yeah, I always like when they get the photos wrong. There's recently a photo now saying, it was in the New Zealand Herald website yesterday, going on about increased international departures from Auckland Airport, and had a picture of an old Singapore 747 passenger plane docked at the terminal. I mean, that hasn't happened for a few years.
Yeah, probably 15 years, 10 years at least.
Yeah.
When I get annoyed at that, and I do, because that happens a lot, I always think, well, why don't you just put a picture of the right flyer in there? You know? And
you might as well.
At least it's the first aircraft to ever fly, and it sort of says it all about aviation. Okay, it was 1903. But
yeah,
but you know, it's a plane, so it has historical significance. So you might as well maximize the opportunity, I would have thought. Maybe they don't have stock photos of the right flyer.
Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe okay. Not. Yeah. Moving on. So what else you got there, mate?
New airline serving Adelaide, Australia, which is nice for them. Batik Air, formerly Malindo Air, part of the Lion Air Group. They're going to be flying Adelaide to Indonesia 3 times a week. Doesn't say what aircraft. Batik Air mainly consists of A320s and 737s. Possibly.
Do they have any A330s? Have they got any A330s?
They've got two.
Oh, maybe it's that. They operate the MAX, don't they? Or they've got a number of 737 types, but they'd have the legs, wouldn't they? Or just?
I expect they would, yeah. Yeah, it's coming straight due south from Indonesia to Adelaide. It might be able to do it. It should be able to do it, I would expect, yeah. So could be a 737 or even an A320neo.
Do Garuda fly into there? No.
No, I don't think so, no. No.
Oh, okay, all right.
So that's good for the good burgers of Adelaide. More airline news. Aeroflot is reactivating part of their fleet. They're reactivating 12 aircraft, a mix of 777s, 737-800s, A321s, and their A350s. So they've obviously got places to go, which is probably not meant to be happening. But yeah, that's what they're doing. But there again, Russia's big enough. They can be using their A350s on flights between Moscow and Vladivostok. They probably need to.
Well, that's 8 hours right there.
Yeah, exactly. So Aeroflot seems to be doing all right. They don't seem to be perturbed by the fact that they can't get direct access to spares, because I'm pretty sure they can get all the, yeah, they're sending their A330s to Iran. I'm pretty sure they can send anything else they can't service to China. So that's not an issue for them. So, you know, whatever you think, they seem to be doing all right. Interesting story with a Kiwi angle, Malloy Aerospace. We spoke about them once or twice when we were doing the other podcast. Malloy Aerospace is run by a Kiwi who lives across the water from, or who grew up across the water from Auckland Airport, the other side of the inlet there. He went over to the UK years ago and started trying to develop a sort of a hover bike, which was, it was awesome. It was a beautiful thing. It probably wasn't going to work, but it looked fantastic. It had a BMW motorbike engine, two shafts going fore and aft, powering two overlapping fans. So it wasn't like a quadcopter. Well, it was kind of like a quadcopter, except that the two propellers, instead of being on outriggers, they actually overlap somewhat. And then they had, as a control system, they had vanes in the slipstream. And it looked wonderful, you know, carbon fiber and lots of mechanics and everything. And he sort of slowly gave up on that. And he's just won a contract with the U.S. Marines, $8 million contract with the U.S. Marines to supply them with a whole bunch of giant drones. If you're familiar with a DJI drone, kind of looks like that, but it's massive. And this one can carry, the one they've sold to the U.S. Marines, can carry 150 pounds a fair distance. And I recently visited the factory in January. And needless to say, they're going to be able to carry a lot more than 150 pounds pretty soon.
So that would work really well on the battlefield, right?
Really well on the battlefield. Really well on the battlefield. In fact, one might say they could already be working quite well on the battlefield. And
I can think of a battlefield.
Yes. And remotely controlled, you know, obviously not line of sight anymore, but they've got, you know, controlled from space, so to speak. Oh. And they can carry a lot. They can carry it pretty far, and they are quite interesting when you get up close to them. It's very cool, and good on him. He's done well. He's stuck with it for a long time. He's got quite a big operation now. They make an awful lot in-house. They're based at an old airfield in the UK, where most of the ferry pilots were based, that ferried aircraft out from the factories to the forward operating bases in the south of England.
World War II, yeah.
Yes. And that brings me on to another story. My maths teacher, when I was failing at maths as a kid in South Africa, my maths teacher was an elderly woman who'd actually been a ferry pilot during the Second World War.
Yeah, there were lots of female ferry pilots. They're sort of unsung heroes, and they flew every type of aircraft you could ever imagine.
That's what she said. You know, she'd flown like most marks of Spitfire, you know, and Wellingtons and all this type of thing. They'd flown it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. She says it was awesome. And then I asked her, I said, why didn't you carry on flying after the war? And she was like, well, there was no role for women pilots after the war.
Yeah, that'd be right.
Yeah, it's pretty sad because she was obviously capable.
Well, a lot of the male pilots, I know this because I interviewed once a guy who used to be a Wellington bomber pilot in Europe and also around Burma, around there. And he did a lot of flying, but got to the end of the war and there were no jobs going and thought, well, I've done that, and became a school teacher.
As you do. Yeah.
No, but they had this incredible experience, you know, back in the day.
Yeah. And, you know, never flew again, which is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And looking back through the old photos, that was amazing.
Margot, my maths teacher, she only ever went as a passenger again in a plane. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, at least, you know, she'd done it. So getting back to that story, though, about the giant drone just shows you never give up, right? You never give up.
No, by all accounts, he's pretty single-minded. And he went hard, and it's paying off for him. Yeah. And it's got pretty big pretty quickly because there's a lot of demand for them now. Yeah.
Well, you'd think that our military would be interested in that.
Yeah, well, it's a kind of a pity that he's not making them in New Zealand. I mean, there's obviously reasons why he's not making New Zealand. And actually, if he was working in New Zealand, he probably wouldn't be able to sell them to the US Marines, because there'd be a thousand reasons why you couldn't do that. But yeah. And talking of demand, China's HNA Airlines have just ordered 100 C919s, COMAC 919s. You know, that's the Chinese-developed A320-class airliner, and in fact looks remarkably like an A320, as well as looking like an airliner. And if you're a Chinese airline, or probably any airline in that BRICS constellation, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, if you're looking for a relatively cheap A320 analog, probably not a bad deal. It's got Western engines, it's got Honeywell flight control systems, it's got landing gear co-developed with Western companies. It's probably a remarkably good deal. Performance very similar to an A320, slightly lower capacity, slightly less capable, but I bet you it's a whole lot cheaper and won't come with many strings attached either.
Yeah, and the Chinese airline system is gigantic. So there could be hundreds more orders there coming.
hundreds more orders. And once they get the kinks ironed out, you know, if South Africa or India or Brazil, you know, why wouldn't they?
Well, Brazil's a huge aviation market. Someone told me it's the third biggest corporate jet market in the world.
Okay, yeah. Well, I guess that's why Embraer makes that Phenom.
They've got enough scale there to have their own, you know, serious aircraft or aerospace manufacturing system. And Embraer sell a lot of aircraft. In fact, I see they've already delivered, I think this year already, or in the past year, 150 airliners. So it's pretty good.
And I think Portugal's ordered that KC-390, haven't they?
Yeah, that's Embraer sort of competitor to what, the C-130?
Yeah, or the A-400, you know. I think Portugal has been the first overseas operator, and they're hoping for more. I think Hungary's ordered them, the Dutch have ordered them, but the Dutch are coming on later, and Portugal have got five, and they're already operating it. So that's interesting that the Dutch have ordered it, right?
Yeah. They tried to sell it to us. They bought the demonstrator over here a few years ago, but we went for C-130Js.
So the Dutch and the Portuguese have ordered them one-to-one replacements for C-130s. Bang, done.
Yeah. And jet power, of course, and would have been perfect probably for, well, you know, high wing. So the foreign object damage is way limited. I guess we just stuck with the same old. There'll be reasons for that, but I guess the Americans want us to buy American.
And they can carry 23 tons for just under 3,000 kilometers, or 14 tons, nearly 6,000 kilometers.
Wow.
Okay. That's not bad, eh?
And that's Brazil. All right, a couple more stories to finish up on. We were talking about Turkish Airlines coming to Australia a couple of chats ago. Well, I see now that the CEO of Turkish is saying they have their eye on Australia and kind of watch the space. So that seems to be on the horizon. And that should really make flying out of Australia a lot more competitive, you would think.
It will. And there's quite a large Turkish community down here, right? So they've got a lot to be proud of. So I reckon they'll mop up a fair bit of that market. And Turkish Airlines, as we said last episode, Turkish Airlines has fantastic connections into Western Europe, certainly Germany, those parts. It's amazing, actually.
Your side of the Tasman, quickly, as we sum up, Qantas heading west and launching limited edition indigenous amenity kits, Martin, you'll be happy to know. And this is for the service that they've just launched now from Melbourne all the way to Exmouth, which is way up the top of sort of like northwestern Australia, right?
Yes, it's the westernmost, basically the westernmost point of Australia. Yeah.
Yeah, 700 miles north of the state capital, Perth. And with the service, they're introducing new limited edition amenity packs featuring the designs of indigenous artist Kevin Wilson, who I thought was an Australian comedian. Obviously, he's got another line of work as well.
Kevin, busy man, Kevin Bloody Wilson.
Yeah, that's the guy. Population of 3,000 at Exmouth. And they're saying here, it's a mecca for getting close to humpback whales and whale sharks. They're flying a 73-800 QF-1052 is the flight number. And it's a five-hour flight. Yep, 5 hours. Does that tempt you?
Well, I would have loved to have gone there last week because that's where the solar eclipse went bang over Exmouth. And so they had 100% occlusion or whatever it's called. And I wish I'd known a bit earlier because I went to Perth that week, and had I known, I'd have tried to get up to Exmouth.
Okay, there you go. So I wonder how that'll go and whether, you know, large people will have to, guests of size will have to buy an extra seat for that. And that remains to be seen. Yeah. The French have been striking. And this is because of the increasing pension age from 62 to 64. Boy, the French don't muck around when they don't like something, do they?
It's an outrage. It's an absolute outrage.
Yeah. Air traffic controllers have been taking part in rolling strikes. Authorities have warned that this will result in disruption. That should have passed now, but there's a possibility of ongoing disruption. So bear that in mind if you're traveling to France or planning to travel to France anytime. And to end up on, I bet you've been wondering all this time, Martin, what is the busiest air route in the world?
That keeps me awake at night, mate.
Well, I thought it was Melbourne-Sydney. I think that's the third or fourth busiest in the world. No, it's not that. It is, in fact, I was surprised to see this, it's the route connecting Gimpo Airport in the South Korean capital of Seoul and the country's Jeju Island, the world's busiest air route. How about that, eh?
That is interesting. What happens on Gimpo Island?
No, it doesn't really say here. It doesn't say what happens, but something's happening. The busiest U.S. Route is Los Angeles and Las Vegas to the two Hawaiian islands. So okay. That's what it says here. The busiest route this April in the Middle East is Cairo, Jeddah. And that's for obvious reasons.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's seasonally busy, eh?
Yeah, well, it's the pilgrimage to Mecca, surely.
Yeah, the Hajj, yeah. But that's not all year, but I guess it's pretty busy on...
Well, in the Hajj season month, 450,000 people fly on the route. I had a friend who had to clean out a plane that was leased to an airline that did Hajj flights. Not pretty. Not pretty.
No, they cram it in, don't they?
Well, and also, you know, they use the amenities and you can imagine what happens there.
Yes.
Okay. And anyway, if people see, move, we don't want to dwell on that. If people see an unusual looking or an aircraft that they aren't used to seeing in Christchurch in Auckland, just so you know, it's Bahrainian based Texel Air who have now moved into New Zealand and they're flying freight between Auckland and Christchurch at the moment. They're going to be adding another 737. Who are they working for? The aircraft is called Samantha, by the way. It's a 737-300, which has spent time in New Zealand with Air New Zealand in the past, but they're providing cargo services on behalf of Parcel Line Express, a subsidiary of Freightways and New Zealand Post, with the carrier planning to introduce the other aircraft on the same route in this month. And they say here in the report I'm reading that Samantha has been behaving herself in her new home.
That's a bit, how'd you say, condescending? Why wouldn't she? But anyway.
Well, it's an old aircraft, I suppose, is the point they're making.
Okay, fair enough.
But who would have... I didn't realize that Texel Air had started here. That happened all very quietly.
Well, started. They chartered it and opened up a company to support it, I suppose. I don't think they're going to be here long or there long.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll see. But if you see an aircraft with Texel Air on the side of it and Samantha... the name under the cockpit windows, you now know what that's all about. Well, I think we've covered a bit of news. There's always stuff happening in the airline aviation world. And that's it for about the last 2 weeks. Thank you, Martin, for coming on the program again.
No, thank you, Paul. No worries. Always a pleasure.
RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.